Hello and welcome to your Newsmax Daily for Friday, February 16th, 2024. It's the 47th day of the year, the 7th Friday of the new year, with 32 days to go until the calendar says spring. Today, the calendar says it's National Almond Day, believed to be one of the earliest cultivated foods of mankind, dating back to mentions in the Bible, long before almonds made their way to the United States from Spain in the mid-1700s. Topping the headlines this Friday, an outspoken Russian opposition leader has died in jail. Surprise! An FBI informant has been arrested, accused of lying about the Bidens. Another surprise. And the potential misconduct of Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fannie Willis and her prosecutor boyfriend in Donald Trump's Georgia election case is back for a second day.
It is a lie.
And it's highly offensive when they try to implicate that you slept with somebody the first day you met with them. And I take exception to it.
Willis was supposed to be back on the stand this morning, but it looks like that didn't go as planned.
Who's talking about Willis?
I intentionally waited to 9 o'clock for the hearing, and prosecutors came out and said she was not going to take the stand and they had no more questions. Let's start with Newsmax hosts Carl Higbee and former criminal defense attorney and trial attorney Greta Van Susteren.
Joining me now to help unpack this dumpster fire, very own legal expert and host of The Record right after me at 6 o'clock here on Newsmax, Greta Van Susteren. Greta, unpack this for me.
Well, it certainly was exciting. I mean, she certainly was bold. She came for a fight. She got her fight. Look, I got to admire her moxie. I like it. You know, she certainly wasn't afraid, but she certainly didn't do herself any service because, look, beyond all the sort of wild fist throwing, verbal fist throwing in this case, and there's a lot of it, here's the truth, is that she hired a special counsel. She admits that she had an affair with him before an indictment was actually secured. And this is why it's important, because that indictment is like a crown jewel in a prosecutor's crown. I mean, the prosecutor wants to try the case, wants to have that one on her belt and something. So naturally, the implication, whether it's real or not real, is it has the appearance of having some sort of wanting so badly to get something achieved that you lose your sense of judgment. And you can't have a prosecutor who's doing that. And you can't have a special counsel who's trying to please his girlfriend. And you can't have so much, so much of your personal stuff in an indictment. So she's got to go.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, Greta, is she was asked point blank, like, you, hey, long time ago, you said you would never sleep or have a relationship with anybody who worked for you. Now she is. Now, have you ever in your history of being an attorney, as you were, ever seen someone from the stand act this, you say moxie, I say arrogant?
Yeah, no, of course she was arrogant. She was obnoxious, without any doubt. But look, this isn't a jury trial. It's a judge trial. The judge is supposed to see through that, but absolutely. And have I ever seen a prosecutor lie before, say one thing before and say something later? Of course I have. But what's different here, Carl, is that this must be fair. And this is a case, and even if this were a petty larceny, a stolen ham from the grocery store, it must be fair. But this involves an election involving the President of the United States. And here you've got a prosecutor who's sleeping with someone she chose to be the special prosecutor, and this is occurring even before they secure an indictment. I know all the other timelines, but the important thing for me is the easy answer for me is she did this before they secured an indictment, and they really wanted this indictment because, look, I have a sense that, you know, there's a risk he really wanted to please his boss, and so she's got to go. Look, the other thing that she did is that she's been coy. She hasn't been straight up.
Now, keep in mind, D.A. Willis initially indicted 18 co-defendants along with President Trump, right? You remember that? Four of them have already made plea deals. Back to Carl and Greta.
So, Greta, let's ask the serious question, though. I mean, you say it's done. There's even MSNBC agrees with you. It's on a lot of their analysts. But the bigger thing here is, let's say she does get thrown off this. These people, some of them have already pled guilty, Jenna Ellis, Sidney Powell. What happens to their conviction or their guilty pleas that resulted in convictions?
What?
Go ahead.
Well, what they'll do is they'll move to vacate them. The move to vacate based on prosecutorial misconduct or something else, and the judge will either grant it or not grant it. But look, you know, they didn't get hit particularly hard. They all got probation. They had to write a little silly apology letter to the state of Georgia, so it's not like the worst thing ever. But of course, you know, Sidney Powell's got it. I mean, some of them have got problems with their bar as a result of having the conviction, so it does have ramifications for the people who are actually lawyers. There is a possible relief there. But what the big thing here is the American people are unfortunately seeing how the sausage is made in some cases. Yeah. And when prosecutors do something like this in one case, and even a high-profile case, it undermines everybody's confidence in the system. It's like when you have a rogue judge. Yeah. And you can't have a situation where you're sleeping with someone you're sleeping with someone who you want you to do a favor, which is to secure an indictment so that it makes your career look really good when you eventually win a case against the former president of the United States.
Greta on Frontline with Carl Higbee. A moment ago, she said, when prosecutors do something like this, especially in a high-profile case, it undermines everyone's confidence in the system. Well, it doesn't get any more high-profile than a case against a former president of the United States. And I think it's fair to say that most everyone's confidence in the system had already been undermined. More from Carl Higbee.
Both Fannie and Nathan Wade have asserted that they began their relationship after he was hired as the lead prosecutor for the case. And attorneys for Trump and his 18 co-defendants blew those assertions out of their water with their first witness, which is exactly why the attorneys for both Wade and Willis objected to every witness.
Did you observe them do things that are common among people having a romantic relationship?
Yes.
Such as, can you give us an example?
Hugging, kissing.
Miss Yurdy, who was a Fannie Willis friend, by the way, worked in the office. She refuted Willis's sworn statement and said that she witnessed them hugging and kissing long before he was hired. But why is that important? Folks, Wade was hired in November of 2021, but both him and Fannie Willis have previously asserted under oath in statements that their relationship didn't begin until early 2022. Why is this critical? Because it raised all kinds of ethical questions on whether Nathan Wade was hired for romantic reasons or for professional qualifications. Additionally, Wade has never prosecuted a RICO case, and he still got the job over other qualified candidates who had. It all matters. And from testimony today, it appears that they're both lying. And false statements about a relationship that led to the hiring of the lead prosecutor could and probably will lead to legal jeopardy for DA Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, and could honestly affect the future of their bar license. Essentially, this whole thing would tank the entire case against Donald Trump in Georgia. Look, I've said this before. If you're prosecuting such a high-profile case, you better be as pure as the driven snow, not only for the optics of the case, but for the people of Georgia who are footing the bill for this. About $700,000 to date.
The witness testimony was damning as a friend and co-worker of D.A. Willis. But today they're attempting to discredit her by saying she was fired from the job, so she's just a disgruntled former employee. Here's Newsmax host Bianca De La Garza with constitutional law expert and attorney Alan Dershowitz.
If it is determined that there was perjury, would it go beyond then just her being, as Judge McAfee said, disqualified then? Could there actually be a legal charge against her, be it with a bar complaint or would it be something? Could she face a criminal charge, Professor Dershowitz, for her conduct here?
If she, in fact, misled the court and if she conspired with him to commit perjury, there should be criminal prosecution or disbarment proceedings. And I think what you need now here is an independent counsel, a special counsel, say appointed by the Attorney General of the state of Georgia, to look into this and determine whether there's enough here for a criminal prosecution or a legal ethics possible disbarment. I think you can't just sweep this under the rug. You have a witness, and she was, I thought, fairly credible, saying that, you know, I was her friend, and she admitted to me that she had a romantic relationship.
Yes.
Going well before she said. So one of them is not telling the truth. And the question is there enough there? Remember, she was fired from her job, the witness, or told to resign from her job. Is there enough there? Is there going to be more corroboration? That's the question.
The larger question then goes, if there is a disqualification and she faces her own legal issues, does a new prosecutor come in and pick up this RICO case? Obviously, this is, you know, a huge case against a former sitting president. And is it worth the spend? I mean, Georgia taxpayers had a special grand jury under Fani Willis. Then they had a regular grand jury. I mean, this has been going on. And many say it's just a witch hunt. And that is, I think, a bigger question when we look at former President Donald Trump. Could this RICO case be unraveling as we know it, sir?
It's possible, but they could assign it to a different DA's office or to the attorney general's office, and they could continue where they left off. There's also another prosecutor, special prosecutor, who was paid less, even though he was much more qualified, and he could take over the case. So I don't think this necessarily marks the end of the case. I think it necessarily marks the end of Fani Willis's career and her and perhaps his as well, but certainly hers.
So Greta Van Susteren and Alan Dershowitz, two highly, highly qualified, non-biased attorneys, think that that's it. It's grits for Fani Willis. And moving on to another case against Trump that also took center stage on Thursday.
Let's talk about a date that has been set, March 25th. This is the Bragg case in New York. Stormy Daniels, the payments that were made. Alvin Bragg was the first, as you know, to come forward ever to indict a former president. Very many legal scholars, I believe even you said this, novel theory, untested, weak indictment. But here we are this morning. Trump is in a New York courtroom and a judge decided not to dismiss the case. So it goes forward. What do you make of the March 25th deadline? We also know that is after March 5th, Professor, which is Super Tuesday. He is the leading GOP candidate. Is there some type of curiosity here that you have with the timing of all of this?
Well, I think the timing is routine. I think the case itself is not routine. In 60 years of practicing and teaching criminal law, I have never seen a weaker, more contrived, made-up case. Under the theory of this case, Alexander Hamilton would have been prosecuted for not publicly disclosing his affair that he had while Secretary of the Treasury. He ultimately disclosed it in the beginning. He disclosed it. You know, when you make deals with people and sign these kinds of agreements, it's implicit that you're not going to disclose it publicly. So there's never been a case in the history of this country where somebody has been prosecuted for this kind of crime. It's a made-up crime. It's not only novel. It's just not there. It's not
Peter.
It's not a federal crime. It's not a state crime. I think that the district attorney ought to be investigated by bar associations for bringing this case. So I don't think there's anything to this case. That doesn't mean there won't be a conviction in New York City,
of course,
in Manhattan. The jury might convict a ham sandwich if its name is Trump. So the fact that there is a conviction doesn't mean the case is any good.
Right. And then there could also be an appeal. We have a long ways to go.
Bianca De La Garza on Newsline at noon with Alan Dershowitz. They could convict a ham sandwich in New York if its name were Trump. And Dershowitz, as you know, is no fan of Trump, or at least he's never voted for him. The hush money case is from a check that now convicted felon Michael Cohen, one of Trump's former attorneys, gave to pornography star Stormy Daniels to remain silent about a sexual encounter that she alleged to have had with Trump back in 2006. Let me remind you as well, Stormy Daniels lost a defamation suit that she filed against Trump. She, of course, appealed the ruling and lost the appeal, leaving her owing the former president $300,000 in legal fees, which she never paid because her attorney, Michael Avenatti, remember that clown? Talk about a rise to fame and then crashing and burning. He's in jail for a long time on a variety of charges. But Avenatti stole hundreds of thousands of dollars that Stormy Daniels had received as an advance on a book deal. All of this was just a few years ago. Seems like a long time ago already, right? Here's Trump outside of the courtroom in New York yesterday.
We'll just have to figure it out. I'll be here during the day and I'll be campaigning during the night. Biden should be doing the same thing, but he'll be sleeping. This is all from the DOJ. This all comes out of Washington. They're coordinated with the district attorney and the AG. The case tomorrow, which is a rigged deal, is all coordinated with the district attorney, and it's coordinated with the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, who ought to be ashamed of herself. She's campaigned for years of trying to get Trump without knowing anything about me. It's all a rigged. It's a rigged state. It's a rigged city. It's a shame. What they ought to do is go out and take care of the violent crime and the migrant crime that's destroying people and killing people. Not a case that everybody says, you take a look at the legal documents and the legal scholars writing about this. They say there's no crime. This is no crime. But outside, right outside their courthouse, this courthouse, people are being murdered. So it's a very unfair situation. They want to keep me nice and busy so I can't campaign so hard.
Former President Trump speaking outside the courtroom yesterday after the judge set a March 25th trial date. Biden should be doing the same thing, but he'll be sleeping. That was funny. All right, let's shift gears a bit. Eric Bolling had a terrific interview with Bill O'Reilly about the border bill, Ukraine, and a lot more. Check this out.
I think that Ukraine is blocking Putin from creating world disorder. That's what they're doing. So I'm a historian. I know what Hitler did in the 30s. I know that Putin has modeled himself on old Adolf. He wants to reconstitute the Soviet Union. He's already got Belarus. He's already got Georgia. He wants Ukraine. And then he'll start in the East. And this guy's not going to stop. He's going to create disorder in the world. If Putin wins in Ukraine, wins means he controls the country, then China's going to go into Taiwan. The mullahs in Iran are going to do far worse than they're doing now. And the nut in North Korea is going to saber rattle in South Korea. It's going to happen. So the people who object to sending U.S. money in the form of weapons to Ukraine are basically short-sighted, in my opinion, my humble opinion. They don't understand the villainy of Vladimir Putin and what he really wants. So I would vote for the aid. That being said, I don't think it can't be open-ended. All right. You got to get a system in place where Ukraine has got to be able to dig in and defend itself without these massive subsidies. But right now, I don't think the border should be tied into that bill, by the way. I think the House should come up with its own border bill. Just come up with your own border bill. Let's take a look at it.
Which will get killed on the Senate. My question would be, let's go back to this. So,
Maybe not, though. There's a reconciliation process. The Senate has its own bill. I would not have voted for that bill because it doesn't solve the problem. It still allows 2 million people in here unsupervised. Yeah. It's got to stop.
Yeah, a year.
So I'm a year. No on that.
2 million a year, yeah. So what's the number? Russia's a big country, Bill. They got a lot of assets. They got oil assets. They've got a lot of military assets. Ukraine, not so much. Is there a number that Bill O'Reilly would say enough is enough? 200 billion, a trillion?
No, when do you stop? Not at this point in history. If you surrender to Putin and Putin controls Ukraine, the world would devolve into disorder. That will happen.
So is there a number, Bill? Is it a trillion?
Is it five trillion?
At some point, you got to say it's not going to happen, right?
All right. At some point, maybe that's true. We're not there now. And if you understand history at all, in 1937, 50% of the American population had no beef with Hitler. They didn't want to get involved. We're talking about Joseph Kennedy, Charles Lindbergh, big boys. Nah, leave him alone. Let him do what he wants to do. All right. And Putin knows that. Now, here's the caveat on this. If Trump is reelected, I think Trump could solve that Ukraine problem. I think Putin will go, all right, I'm going to take the best deal I can get because I know this guy is not going to let me overrun Ukraine.
That is, of course, Bill O'Reilly, and that led to Eric playing the clip of Putin saying he would rather have Biden as president than Trump.
His question was Putin or Biden. He said Biden. He's more experienced than they say. He's more predictable.
You know, what do I care what Putin says? He's never told the truth in his life. I mean, I don't know who Putin wants. I don't care who Putin wants. He's a liar. He's a manipulator. Whatever game he's playing, I don't want to play. I just want to stop the man. I want to hurt the man as much as possible. And believe me, he's being hurt by this Ukraine thing. I mean, talk about open-ended. I mean, you got hundreds of thousands of casualties on the Russian side. And, you know, how long are the Russian people going to put up with this guy? I don't know. But he's not skating right now.
Fellow Long Islander Bill O'Reilly on The Balance with Eric Bolling. I would encourage you to go to Newsmax On Demand and watch that whole interview if you missed it. They talked about a lot of stuff. It was fantastic. There is big news out of Russia today, as I mentioned at the open as well. Opposition leader Alexei Navalny, an outspoken critic of President Putin, has reportedly died in prison. He was 47 years old. Shocking. And yes, I'm being sarcastic. Yesterday, I talked about Paul Contreras and Trey Filter, the two men who took down one of the shooters at the Kansas City Super Bowl parade. Trey and his wife, Casey, who are at the parade with their two sons, spoke with our Sean Kreisman and Emma Reckenberg on National Report.
We did notice there was a large military presence, or at least one that was comforting. I could see gunmen on the roofs. I think a lot of people probably felt safe as well from that. At that point, the parade was over. We began to work our way towards our vehicle like everybody else. We heard a series of gunshots, and at that point, I was under the impression it was probably a jokester or somebody with firecrackers, but apparently it was not. And we were just in that sea of people there, and there's a big commotion, you know, get them. And I just happened to look to my left and saw just a mess of people running. And one guy, it happened so fast, but he definitely didn't look like the other people. He was running for a different reason, it looked like. So we just, for all I know, I could have tackled the wrong person. But that other gentleman was there to help, and thank God. During the tussle, they were screaming, people were yelling, there's a gun. I was under the impression he still had the gun. Apparently my wife here grabbed the assault rifle and drug it away over here to this wall that's shown here in the video. At that point, Paul and I were concerned he still had the gun. I began to just hit him in his ribs until the cops get there. At which point I was pulled off. I was concerned about where my family and kids were. So once I rounded them up, we got out of there.
Casey, let me jump to you really quickly on that, and again to what we've heard about this story. We're trying to get the facts right because the police chief, who's holding a news conference right now, but she's not releasing many details. We know that they have three suspects. We don't know who they are. Here's a live look, though. That is Chief Graves speaking now, answering questions by reporters. But Casey, Trey says you picked up a gun. Can you describe that moment? Was that gun from the man that Trey tackled? Or was that gun just laying on the ground? Was it being held by someone? Can you give us as much detail as you can?
It was dropped by him when he was tackled, and it landed by my feet. And I looked down, and my first thought was just to get it out of harm's way, out of the way, so no one else could get to it. And because I didn't know who was who or, you know, what anyone else had plans for. So I just wanted to get it out of the way.
That's Trey and Casey Filter on National Report. My gosh, you would like to think that you would do the same thing under those circumstances, right? But when your life is truly in danger, I mean, a lot of things go through your mind. And in many cases, most cases, panic just sets in fear, right? And they were there with their kids. They did this being there with their kids. God bless them and the other guy, Paul Contreras, who I had in yesterday's Newsmax Daily. There is another massive sporting event happening this weekend. Sunday is the Daytona 500, a great American spectacle that actually started last night, what they call the duels, two qualifying races. My guy, Joey Logano, has the pole position. That means he's starting number one. which is really just more about bragging rights than anything else. But unfortunately, the weather forecast is calling for a lot of rain. Of course, the weather has been spectacular here all week long, but we'll see what happens. And if you're planning on doing your taxes this weekend, the IRS said this morning that most Americans can expect to receive a smaller refund this year. Yay! They say the average refund so far is $1,300 and change. At this time last year, refunds were averaging $1,900 and change. $600. That's a big difference, especially since everything is costing more. All right, you can keep up with all the news all day and all weekend on Newsmax, Newsmax Plus, and at Newsmax.com. Don't miss Wake Up America Weekend Edition Saturday and Sunday, Saturday and Sunday Agenda, Saturday Report with Rita Cosby, America Right Now with Tom Basile, Dick Morris, Sebastian Gorka, and much more. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Newsmax Daily. I hope you're enjoying it. I'm Tony Marino, and you can always comment at radio_Marino on X. Eat some nutritious almonds today. Have a great weekend, and keep on fighting the good fight.
News breaks every minute, every day. You need the app, the Newsmax app. Find it free on your smartphone store. Then watch us anytime, anywhere.